Artificial intelligence is gradually becoming a part of our lives. But are we aware of the changes and challenges this will bring to the economy as a whole? It's more than just an industry restructuring. Amy Tong reports.
You know, it's really funny. People sort of see computers just taking over. But what's actually happening is a developing partnership between humans and AI. It's not us and them. It's just us. You know, they're helping us by extending our capability. And it's going to reach into just about every field that you can think of is going to be using AI in some really smart way to actually help people do their jobs better.
What current occupations will rise in demand and which ones will kind of shrink or become redundant?
Yeah, well, in the computing field, there is going to be a lot going on in the whole data science area. And, you know, that's big data, that's sifting through that vast torrent of data and finding out useful things from that. Most areas in the IT world are going to actually increase. But in the non-IT area, the research that's come out of the big recruiting firms, you know, they're looking to see what jobs are going to actually be big in the future. So they're predicting that it's things like teachers and engineers and all manner of health professionals, not just doctors, but psychologists and physiotherapists and, you know, you name it. All of those human-centered occupations that are important now are going to continue to be important. You know, the reality, I think, is that we're going to just develop a really productive, collaborative partnership with them.
It's really interesting you say that because the Committee for Economic Development Australia estimates that 40% of jobs that exist today are at risk due to automation. So in this situation then, what would happen to those people who lose their jobs and new jobs aren't created fast enough? Would we have to look into kind of developing a much more sophisticated welfare system?
Sure, that's a really big area to address. The first thing I'd say about that is saying that 40% of jobs are going to go is really just focused on one aspect, a negative aspect. What's also going to happen is that, you know, about the same number of jobs are going to be invented in the new economy. As old jobs go, new jobs come in, and technology has always replaced jobs. We don't know what half of these new jobs are going to be yet. There's just so many different things going to be happening. So the problem is really for sort of middle-aged blue-collar workers who they lose their job, you know, at the Altona car factory and they have trouble, you know, because a robot is doing the work or maybe the factory has gone offshore. What are they going to do? Well, many of them do struggle to reskill and find new work. They're the ones that are going to have a problem, I guess. And to the second part of your question, do we need a more sophisticated welfare system? Yes. Yes, we absolutely do. And, you know, this idea of the universal basic income has been floated. Have you come across this UBI in your travels?
Isn't it just kind of like free money in a way?
Well, yes. I mean, it essentially, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's basically giving everybody a non-means-tested living allowance. And as outrageous as that sounds, it is going to solve a whole bunch of problems. For one thing, we've got this huge welfare apparatus, you know, and a federal bureaucracy that's enormous, just administering it. And, you know, all of that could go away and save billions and billions of dollars just because we didn't need to have such a big administration. But what it really is doing is investing in the human capital that exists out there. There's a lot of people with a lot of good ideas, but they're sort of trapped in this poverty trap. They're just struggling to get a bit of work, and they never actually get out of it. As soon as they get work, their welfare benefits dry up, and they never quite break out, or it's very hard for them to break out. But, of course, there's the real sort of worry that it's going to bleed us all dry and it's, you know, it's not sustainable. I've heard a lot of debate going on about this, and it's an idea that's not going away. It's probably going to take about 5 or 10 years before we're ready to actually do something about it in Australia. You know, other parts of the world, in Canada, in Finland, in Switzerland, the Netherlands, they're all either doing it or they're seriously considering doing it. You know, and I think it's going to just, you know, expand.
So would we have to restructure the economy to kind of face a technological future at some stage?
Yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, that's the real sort of challenge, I think.
Yeah.
It's not just smart machines. It's 3D printing is also going to be a major disruptive thing on our economy, because the manufacturing and logistics industries are going to be really impacted. And so we really need to be encouraging new industries or new ways for people to earn money. And, you know, one way would be to encourage startups, you know, the creative economy, funding people to start up their own little business. I mean, there's lots of communities around the world recognizing that there's a lot of creative talent, and if you foster it, then it can achieve all sorts of wonderful things. Needless to say, Silicon Valley is very positive and optimistic about the idea of a UBI. They see it as welfare for sort of startups and creative people, you know, get it going.
How do we actually prepare ourselves for like this massive change then?
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, that's getting to the heart of the issue. And, you know, I think the answer there is to recognise the importance of creativity and to be teaching creativity in schools, so that thinking in new ways and doing things in new ways is seen to be a good thing and not a thing that needs to be stopped.
Right.
Now, I know that sounds a bit odd, but many cultures are not terribly encouraging of change. You know, we have our ways of doing things. We like them. We're comfortable with them. We've invested a lot of time and energy in those ways. You know, I've had a really strong interest in the cultures of places like Silicon Valley and other technology hubs around the world, like the one in Berlin. And, you know, I've really been keen to understand what makes them a bit different. And, you know, the main thing that is different about those guys is that they encourage that new way of thinking, to try new things and to be not to be afraid to fail. They have a saying in Silicon Valley, fail early and fail often, because only then will you get to where you want to be. But whereas most places, and I think Australia is a bit like this, if you try something and don't succeed, then, well, that's a bit shameful, really, and people make fun of you for that. Mm. And, you know, fear of failure is a major reason why people don't try in the first place. So we need to sort of get past that. I was in Berlin for a month, and at this amazing technology park in Berlin called Adlershof, and the guy showing us around said that the state government of Berlin had invested billions of euros into it, and the return on that investment was something like 5 or 6 to 1. For every 1 euro invested, 5 euros was earned. And, you know, they're doing incredible things with next generation solar panel and, you know, solar technology and things like that. Incredible stuff in Australia. I couldn't see it happening to that sort of level of investment.
Dr. David Tuffley there, ending that report by Amy Tong.